Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory West, and on the podcast this week, I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello, everyone.
So, there we are, the first podcast where we can officially say that Scotland are going to be competing in a major tournament. It's just, speaking for myself anyway, I think today is probably the first day since Thursday night. I'm kind of getting a bit, well, not over it, but I'm up until probably like Saturday, I was just still absolutely buzzing about it. Just couldn't get enough of all the sort of social media videos and everything that was going on. Every time I had a chance, I was listening to Yes, or I Can Boogie. Those royalties must be going through the roof for what's her name, Baccara?
Is that Baccara?
Yeah. But I just before we get into some of the other stuff, how did you guys take the game in? Obviously, in your house, but
yeah, just watched it at home. Watched a few of the penalties through my fingers, but just. Delighted. I thought it was just surreal that we've finally done it. I mean, we said probably last week that obviously Scotland haven't done it since 98. You know, we were all sort of 1 year old back then, so obviously zero memory. So this will be the first time we'll be able to see Scotland playing with the big boys in the major tournaments. And it's just obviously a shame that we've got to wait so long for it, because you know I'm in the mood for it to happen tomorrow, really. But it doesn't take anything away. It's obviously a shame that you couldn't go out and party and things like that, but the main thing is that we're there, and hopefully by the time we're there things can return to some sort of normality and we can have a real party in the summer.
Yeah, much the same as Christy. I just watched it with my dad at home, and I was pretty much slumped in my seat for penalties, because I just thought we'd taken off probably our best three penalty takers, and I wasn't confident at all. Just seemed like an all too familiar story, but you kind of go through the years of moments that Scotland have had, just moments in isolation where everyone looks back at it and talks fondly about it, but this is just head and shoulders above all of them. That penalty save is just going to be watched over and over again. I honestly don't think I've ever had a feeling quite like it, watching football full stop. And like you said, Rory, it kind of just put me in such a good mood for the entire weekend. I couldn't get over it like you, and I don't think I'll fully believe it until the day the tournament actually starts.
Yeah, like when that the equaliser went in, when the phrase like sickener, that's the first time watching football I genuinely thought, bloody hell, I'm away to puke here. Like, it was so gutting, just couldn't believe it. I think what we'll do is we'll get some of the other stuff out the way first, and by that I mean Sunday's game against Slovakia, where we obviously lost 1-0 in the Nations League, missed out on winning promotion and our group on that game on Sunday. Obviously have the chance to do that on Wednesday against Israel, but. Much changed side from Thursday's game. I think it was 8 changes in total, wasn't it? I think no one was expecting an absolute sort of clinic of a game here. We're all expecting a wee bit of a sluggish performance, even though the majority of the players that played on Thursday night were rested or rotated. Didn't catch the game live myself. Did either you guys catch it?
No, I never caught it live either. I did not either.
So none of us did.
It's true, because I think it was just, for me anyway, it was at a bad time. I could have caught the last 10 minutes, but I'd been out for football, so I was soaking and freezing, so I was like, oh, I'll just go and get a shower. So unfortunately I didn't catch any. I was listening to a bit on the radio and I've watched the highlights back. By all accounts, a decent performance without obviously getting the result, and a lot of the guys who came in, I say most of them came in and did themselves no harm in terms of forging out a potential place in the squad for next summer, because I suppose that's a lot of what these games are now, as much as they're all building for probably between now and the Euros, they're almost all for qualifying for the World Cup, but a big part of that is getting yourself out there to be in the squad for the Euros.
Yeah, just like as you guys watch the highlights and you're kind of just looking for any players that obviously weren't playing on Thursday and thinking, right, who's going to sort of step up here and take their chance and potentially get a start on Wednesday. And one person that stood out to me, and it's not really a surprise considering we've all kind of touted him for starting and probably suggested that for the game on Thursday, but I thought Stuart Armstrong looked really dangerous every time he got in a sort of a position in the attack in third. I think he created a couple of decent chances, one for Christie, one for McBurney. I think we had McGinn in the bit of a deeper role as he did, or opposed to what he was playing on Thursday night, which allowed Armstrong sort of to play further up the pitch. But I don't know if either of you guys thought, going by the highlights, that he was a bit probably a standout from the game.
Yeah, I thought I agree with you, and I think that's in the system that Scotland are kind of playing at the minute. That's a really important role for one, at least one of the midfielders to really meaningfully get up and support the attack. He had a decent chance as well at one point and showed a decent turn of pace, which I wasn't really expecting from him. So yeah, I think that's a massive positive, and I think he's got every chance of kind of breaking into the starting team for the tournament outright. And the other player that kind of stood out to me a little bit, more so than he has previously when he's played for Scotland, Liam Palmer had a decent outing at right back or right wing back, which, yeah, certainly I've not been impressed in the past by him, but I thought some of his deliveries were good. And given the kind of lack of options at right back, I don't see why he couldn't get into the team.
Yeah, I thought he looked decent as well. He had a decent sort of shot on goal as well in the first half, but I think there's that one cross he puts in for McBurney in the first half, which is pretty pinpoint, and I think you've got to be a wee bit disappointed that McBurney's not put that either side of the goalkeeper. I wouldn't say it's too difficult a header to make that happen. He's kind of allowed the goalkeeper with an easy save there. He's obviously been someone that's taken a fair bit of criticism from Sunday's game as well, as a wee bit sort of is his performance in the actual game from Thursday night. I think I'm asking a bit of a stupid question here, but did he win either of you guys over at all for this last couple of games?
you're right there. Stupid question. I'm really failing to work out what he's actually any good at. Because obviously he's not scoring goals. I think these guys said the other day, I think he's got 2 goals in 30 games. Which for a striker, and I know there's obviously different roles for strikers, but even then, even if you're a striker whose game isn't all about scoring goals, you probably still need to be scoring 1 in every 4 or 5 games, not 1 in every 15. And it's not as though he's not been getting the chances. In this game, he had a good 3, at least I'd say 3 really decent chances on scoring. You've also mentioned the header there. There's the one that slipped into him, I think it's from Armstrong, that he takes a touch and ends up trying to shoot with his left foot anyway, rather than just letting the ball run across him and hit it with his left foot. So he takes a touch, gets the time to get back in and make the tackle. And in the other games as well, since when he's come on, I think he's had a couple of decent chances as well, and he hit the bar with one of them and put one another one wide. But it never looks like it's going to come together. I don't think that... I think he's... there's sort of when people go to caps to goals, I think it's a little bit unfair at times because not too many of them are actually starts, and a lot of them are last 10, 15 minutes coming on, especially recently, to see out games. So that's maybe a little bit unfair on him. But I just don't know what he's actually any good at. People say that he's not a player to play the ball up long to. If that's our game plan, then don't play him, because he clearly, if he's not suited to it, then don't play him, and he's not someone who is good enough for us to change the way we play to accommodate him in the team.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Christy, but I think aside from the fact that he doesn't seem a natural finisher, as you kind of pointed out there, he always looks a bit awkward with the ball at his feet. But again, like you said, and this is more a case of relating back to the game on Thursday in terms of his performance, playing the ball up to him, playing long balls up to him, certainly wasn't working, because he was making the wrong decisions every time. When he should have jumped, he stayed on the ground, and when he needed to just stay on the ground, he would foul somebody. It's hard to see exactly what's, without being too harsh, what the appeal is of having him in the team. And in a way, obviously it's very disappointing to lose that game against Slovakia, but this sort of thing can be a blessing, in the sense that after a performance like that, he's got a lot of work to do to win the manager over, potentially, and it could open the door for other players, the likes of Kevin Nisbet, to maybe force their way into the squad.
Let's just quash a few nonsense statements. I don't think anybody out there is willing on McBurney to not score, to not play well. I don't think anybody on Thursday night was going, oh, I hope he misses this penalty. It's an absolute nonsense argument. People haven't taken him because he's not done anything significant. He's not produced for Scotland. That's pretty much it. The weird agendas that people seem to have, people seem to think exist, I think they are nonsense. I don't care who a Scotland player supports, you know, where they're, you know, if they're born in England or whatever it is. I care if they're playing well, and if they're not playing well, then surely I've got the right to, and everyone's got the right to go and criticise them for that. And at the same time, as I kind of really hope that McBurney does make me and myself and a lot of people sort of eat their own words by turning up and starting scoring.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him score 20 goals in the Premier League and come into Euro 2021 on a run of hot form. So, but I just don't see it happening, unfortunately, but I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said there, Chrissy. No one wants this guy to fail. If it means having another striking option for the national team, then by all means you want the guy to do well, but I'm just not seeing where it's going to come from now. And agree with what you said there as well, Hazlitt. This game's with Dykes being suspended, it was sort of enforced that he was going to start this game, I guess. I mean, you could have looked to Shanklin, but he's not really done much in the top flight so far this season to merit that. So it was a big opportunity for him, and as you said, it might open the door for someone like Nisbet to come in, maybe, if he continues. Well, I'd imagine he's going to continue his form so far this season for Hibs into the season, so that'll be an interesting one to see how that works out in the sort of build up to the Euros next summer. Just to kind of finish off on this game, the goal, I think it's a weird one for me, because the camera angle that I've seen it from on, I think, Sky Sports' highlights on the YouTube channel, you're told on commentary there's a deflection. I'm not sure if I can see how sort of a wicked deflection that is. Gordon seems to go down pretty slowly and almost looks as though he gives up on it. It's a decent strike, but yeah, I'm not sure where I'd be sort of laying the blame at for that goal, if anywhere.
I think we are a little bit too deep. Everyone is. The defence is probably where it should be, but the midfield's too deep, and that's why we can't quite get out quick enough to shut down the shot. I think they maybe take a slight nick off of McLean, but that's maybe just a sort of maybe a desperation kind of attempt to block it. But I think that's my only criticism of the goal, is that the midfield is almost in the defensive line and they should be a couple of yards further up, and that probably stops the shot.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I actually, I think it was a well-struck effort. So, kind of too many criticisms of Gordon, but ultimately he's not David Marshall. So
yeah, well, as we said at the start, there's a game on Wednesday night away to Israel. We always play Israel. I'm just kind of getting a bit sick of that game, but it's a decent sort of opportunity in the sense that the semi-final against them, where we scraped through on pens, not a massively convincing performance, we're looking like an improved side from then. But interesting if you can sort of, prove that we're an improving side with that game, because it's huge. I mean, as much as Thursday's game was amazing and everything, the Nations League is how we got there, and it could offer us another opportunity to get to a World Cup through beating Israel. So it's a massive game on Wednesday. Hopefully with sort of reverting back to majority of the team that played on the Thursday night will be enough to get a win for us. But we'll get on to Thursday's game now. Guess we're kind of in a sense are a wee bit late to the party here, but I don't know how late you can be on something like this, because everyone's going to be talking about this for, I mean, months and months to come. So many different narratives you can take, and you'll eventually get to the stage where we'll be discussing who's going to make the squad. So all that stuff is so much looking forward to. But to the game itself, just I can't remember a Scotland game. It's been so long since this happened, where the starting 11, I can't actually pick out a poor performance. I'll take aside some of the subs that came on. The guys that started the game, I thought all of them were absolutely fantastic in several different aspects of their game. Just, I mean, Dykes is just, what a find. It's just, they totally changed the whole dynamic of how we play. There's times where you get balls sort of cleared in a channel and you're thinking it's just sort of, okay, let's regain the shape. But Dykes has like somehow managed to get himself onto the end of it. Can't remember having this much pace as at Livingston as he's shown or showed in the game against Serbia. When you kind of think back on the game, it just makes you so buzzing again. If I was to sort of ask both of you, who would be like a standout performer for either of you from Thursday night?
Well, you've obviously highlighted the main one. Lyndon Dykes was just outstanding. And I've never, like I said, I've never really seen a striker kind of activate the entire team's performance from the front. He just won everything, held up the ball impeccably. His performance alone almost kind of made the entire Scotland performance, because he just brought everyone else into play superbly. But aside from him, since he's kind of the obvious choice, I thought Declan Gallagher was fantastic. And playing in that central defender role, I thought he pretty much made the position his own. I think that the other two, depending on the opposition you're coming up against, I mean, prior to this game, Christie had kind of marked out some concerns if Tierney was playing. I think that could apply in certain games. Likewise with McTominay, I don't think necessarily he would be suited to every game, but I think Declan Gallagher, I was a bit concerned about him earlier in the season with the way Motherwell and he had started, but he was wonderful and completely marshalled that defence, and a really assured performance. So I think that position in the team is his to lose.
I totally agree with you there. Gallagher was excellent, and I think a large part of it, obviously said about the worry about Mitrovic pulling off on Kieran Tierney. Part of the reason that didn't happen was because Gallagher just won the ball in the air every time before it could even get over there. He was brilliant. But I obviously, you guys have gone with Dykes and Gallagher. I'm going to give a bit of praise for someone who I quite often criticise the Scotland shirt, and that is Callum McGregor, who I think had his best outing in a Scotland shirt, probably alongside Ryan Jack as well. I don't think they did anything spectacular, but they were so disciplined, kept the ball ticking over when we had it, shut down a lot of the space, allowed Christie and McGinn to play a bit higher, allowed the wing-backs to get forward as well. I think that they sacrificed decent parts of their own game to benefit the team. And like I say, it's probably the best those two, especially McGregor. Oh, it was McGregor's 25th cap. And I, when that came out, I was like, I struggle to recall any standout one from the previous 24, but on Thursday night, I thought he alongside Jack, both terrific.
Yeah, I thought McGregor was so good as well. There was what kind of stood out to me about his performance was how many times he just picked up the right position to sort of intercept sort of loose balls Serbia played, or kind of win tackles. And I think the best example you can get from that is the goal. It's a bit of a slack pass from the Serbia left back. I think it comes from the left side anyway, but he's just picked up the absolute spot on position to win the ball back. And it's obviously a lovely sort of reverse pass into Christie, who scores the goal. But yeah, I just thought him and Jack were both really good. I think this is Jack's performance is kind of similar to what he does so well for Rangers, kind of recycling possession, and similar to what McGregor did, just winning the ball back. And might be a wee bit sort of harsh to just say simplify their performances to that, but it's essentially what they did, and they did it so well. And another guy I wanted to give a shout out to was Stephen O'Donnell, because we looked back at that Israel game and thought, this might be a problem position, because as you said earlier on, Palmer wasn't awfully convincing. He looked okay in that Czech Republic game, but there's that caveat of the sort of COVID hit Czech Republic squad. But I just thought O'Donnell was so good in this game, getting up and down that flank as the wing back so well, always offering an option on the overlap. And defensively, what I thought was probably one of his bigger issues in that Israel game, where he was getting caught out a few times with sort of balls around the corner and looked a wee bit off the pace, but he's looking like that player that we know that Steve Clark trusts from his time at Killie. And I mean, more importantly, looking like the player that Steve Clark had at Kilmarnock, just a really, really decent fullback.
Yeah, you have to remember as well with O'Donnell that those previous international games, he still probably would have been kind of building his fitness back
exactly.
So, yeah, I think he can definitely go strength to strength, and certainly at the moment he's the go-to right-back option. But just to go back to what you're saying about McGregor and Jack, as well as I thought McGregor read the game really well and was so efficient with possession, never seemed to give the ball away at all, and certainly not in any dangerous areas. But aside from that, and I'd love to see the actual stats on this. I've not looked for them, but they just seem to have energy for days. Covered every blade of grass, as the cliche would be, but yeah, I was astounded by that. And that's a massive thing in modern football, is how much coverage can your central midfield provide? And I thought both of them were excellent in that regard.
Yeah. Any other guys you want to pick out? There's the obvious mistake from McTominay for the goal, but I thought he had a pretty decent game. Aside from that, and looking
his mistakes, a lot of people will go on about the centre half, but that's nothing to do with him being a centre half, because the likelihood of if he'd been playing in midfield, he'd have probably been picking up the same man anyway. So it's just a general mistake from marking and switching off. It's nothing to do when playing at centre half. And I don't think in the last, what we've played since the Czech Republic game, where I thought that the goal that they scored was probably partially his fault for the man coming in behind him. Up until then, I don't think he's really put a foot wrong at centre half. He's won everything in the air. He's really good at bringing the ball out, especially allows Gallagher to be the heart of the defence, win every tackle, win every header, and likes of McTominay and Tierney take the ball out, take the ball forward. I think there was a spell just before half time, where it's sort of 5 minute spell where both Tierney and McTominay made really good runs forward and looking to create an opportunity. So I do definitely like, I've now come round to the idea of Scott McTominay as a centre-half, but just don't play him as a centre-half in the back four, please.
Yeah, I think it with McTominay at the time, I was pretty furious, obviously, as everybody would have been at that mistake. But yeah, I kind of agree in that. The other thing about playing him as a centre-half is, and because of the system again that we're playing, the ability to play more progressive passes from that area of the pitch is very important, and he can do that. So yeah, I'm definitely all on board with that. And I suppose finally, just because he's my man, I have to give a shout out for Kieran Tierney, because I thought, considering he's playing as the left centre back, he provided a lot going forwards as well off that kind of left hand side. And in fact, Andrew Robertson, who I thought was excellent defensively, I thought Kieran Tierney actually outshone him at the other end of the pitch. So yeah, got to shout him out too.
Yeah, I was actually going to quote you, Haz. So this is a set at 2 minutes past 10 of on Thursday night. Robertson for Scotland is horrendous. Consistently turns in stinkers.
Yeah, well, that was off the back, to be fair, of that shot that he absolutely skied over the bar, which was a massive chance, but just as it happened, only maybe a couple of minutes later, we did score. So everyone's kind of forgotten about that. But yeah, I thought, and I would certainly kind of back myself on the point that going forward, I thought he didn't have one of his best games. To be fair, obviously he's playing with an incredibly high standard of player at Liverpool, but I just feel that there is sometimes something lacking from his kind of creative output for Scotland, considering the amount of assists he gets on a regular basis in the Premier League. I think sometimes that's something that goes a bit missing for Scotland. But yeah, like I said, I think defensively he was actually outstanding.
I think a lot of his offensive qualities for Liverpool is he's him getting in behind a winger pulling in. If you've not really got that player to draw away like the opposition fullback or whatever, and he's maybe not coming from as deep, I think that's maybe slightly affecting things. But even things like his crossing has been a little bit disappointing going forward. But defensively, I thought, like you said there, I thought it was possibly, going back away, possibly his best game for Scotland as well. I think a lot of those players, I think, looking at Gallagher, maybe even Tierney, O'Donnell, Jack, McGregor, Dykes, probably all being their best games for us. And when you've got all that coming together, we absolutely deserve to win and we deserve to be there.
Yeah. Clearly not mentioned guys like Christie and McGinn yet. I think it almost goes without saying how good they were. I thought, in fairness, I didn't think Christie was great in the first half, but after he got his goal, he definitely turned up a bit in the second half, and then after he got his goal, he just was so good. I thought, well, just the front sort of three of him, McGinn and Dykes, I thought the Serbia defence were just absolutely terrified of them. They had no idea how to cope with any of them, and it's the way that sort of the McGinn plays and is getting his big arse sort of in the back of or backing into defenders. It's quite a unique way of playing nowadays. You don't see it too often, and maybe it's just kind of the sort of the emphasis he does it with. But yeah, those guys were so good again. But at this stage, like, without sort of getting too ahead of ourselves, because clearly the team played so well, is this almost the sort of 11 you would go with going into the opening game? If all players, if all were fit, is this who you would go with for the game against? It's the Czech Republic we open up with, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's difficult because I think that you've got. I'm trying to think, because I think the midfield positions, I think there's still a few are maybe up for grabs. You've still got, I think, Steve Clark likes McLean, Armstrong, you've still got, you possibly have Ryan Fraser, because I thought him and, I actually thought Fraser and Dykes worked better than the front three of Dykes, Christie and McGinn, in the couple of games that they played. So you've got obviously got that option there. Wing back, I think it's a 50-50, and you've also got to remember that James Forrest isn't fit at the minute, and he might be earmarked for that role. But other than that, I mean, I like the back three. I think maybe that would be the one. I think obviously people will maybe look to Gallagher, because you've also then got McKenna, Liam Cooper. But like I think Harry said there, with his latest performances, it's very much Gallagher's position to lose. And if he's still turning up for Scotland, regardless of Motherwell form, which, again, I don't think he's been that great this season, then you know he's got that place on merit for performances for the national team.
Yeah, I think, obviously, there's a lot of things that can change in the space of, more than half a season. But, the likes of Griffiths could be more involved for Celtic, hopefully, anyway, because regardless of whether he starts, I think that would be key for Scotland, just to get his fitness kind of back at a place that it should be. But, the defence and goalkeeper, to me, at this moment in time, is set. I know, like you're saying, with Forrest playing at wing-back, potentially in some games, but for me, Steve Clark will want to keep things relatively tight at the back, and I think that O'Donnell's the man to be kind of putting out of that right wing back slot. But yeah, I think the midfield, like you said, Christy, there's definitely positions up for grabs. I think Armstrong is one to look out for if he has a really strong season, as he kind of did at the back end of last. He could definitely force his way in. And I think, again, Christie, it was a bit of an unsung hero in the game on Thursday, but he definitely could drop out, like you said, for Fraser or someone else. You could have a second striker like Griffiths come into that role. So, yeah, there's definitely some scope for change, but that I would go with that as things stand right now.
Yeah, there's no one that really springs to mind that would be and sort of an immediate sort of replacement for any of these guys in the team, other than some of the players that we've mentioned there. There's no one that would sort of spring to my mind, as I said, that would be knocking too many of the defenders out of position. The goalkeeping position, that is clearly an absolute stick on, whether Marshall's playing or not. He's going to be, if fit, he's going to be in goals come next June. I guess we didn't really touch on Marshall, to be fair. While he's going to get the sort of the plaudits for the save and the shootout, I think the save in extra time, that deserves a fair amount of praise as well, because it's the slightest of touches he gets on that. And I think it would be fair to say, if that goes in, it was in the first half extra time, wasn't it, that the game's probably done. I can't really see us, or I couldn't have seen us getting back into it at that point. One thing I was kind of confused about in the game, actually, because I think it was in the Israel game, there wasn't five subs, but then I read that we could have used five on Thursday, or was that, did I get that wrong? Because I thought, right, okay, we've made the three, and then kind of left it really late to take Griffiths on an extra time, and I was thinking, right, okay, he's left it late to use all the subs, but then I read somewhere we could have used five. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I have no idea.
Nah.
Yeah, no idea. I was under the impression it was three, and then I think I did say at the time, do we get a fourth in extra time? So yeah, I just thought it was the three.
Yeah. But yeah, as I said, I think if that went in, the game's done, and you wouldn't have sort of put past Serbia maybe getting another, and it just kind of looking a bit of a disappointment. But yeah, Marshall pulls off an outstanding save, and then, I mean, we all know what happened in the shootout. It's, I think, as well, you've got to give credit to the high standard of penalties. It's just almost immaculate pens, making it look so easy. What were England sort of so worried about for all those years?
it's just their nation and the sort of losing mentality, I think.
Yeah. Aye, I mean,
Chester's piping up, but we've got golf play for 20 years. Yeah. Still going to throw in the dig at England.
I mean, this is like the upgraded version of them kind of overcoming their penalties hoodoo in the last World Cup. Because obviously, to them, that was a big deal. But obviously, they qualify for near enough every tournament. But yeah, this is just a whole different kettle of fish.
But it's just we've been involved with two shootouts. We've now scored every penalty, and I mean some of those players have also scored it, taking them in both games. I mean, the ball's on someone like Kenny McLean, who's taken the fifth penalty twice. He had all the pressure on him in the game against Israel. He scores that, we go through in here. He's got all the pressure on him. If he misses this, then they've got the chance to go and win. I think he probably, I'll single him out for special credit for that. And probably, we maybe gave him a bit of a bashing early on, but McBurney, I mean, for someone who is quite maligned by the support, I mean, to step up and take the penalty. I think he missed one earlier in a shootout for Sheffield United earlier. This year, but for him to come up, step up, take it with such confidence, I think he was the only one I was a little bit worried about when he stepped up. When I see him come up, I went, oh shit, what has he got to do? Because I had a fear that he was going to try something a bit daft, but no, placed it really well, and I was watching that one through my fingers. But like I said earlier, there's nobody would have wanted him to miss that, regardless of if they don't like him for whatever reason. Absolutely everybody wanted him to score that, and I'm delighted that he did, because I would have found it really, same with McTominay as well, because I was obviously made the mistake, and I'd have found it really, it'd be horrible if McBurney was to be the scapegoat for us not going through, but thankfully for him, he managed to score it.
I think you've got
the other thing is, I actually think Lee Griffiths deserves a lot of credit, because I'm pretty sure he didn't. He maybe touched the ball once after coming off of those corners.
I don't think he scored it. I don't think he touched the ball at all. I think that was the first touch of the game.
Yeah, so to come on and take a penalty in those circumstances, like, fair play to him. And like you said, I think McTominay having made the mistake. And also, if you notice, the penalty, I think just before McTominay takes his, it might have been Tadic, can't remember, but he gives it the big one coming the other way after scoring it, and then McTominay scores his and gives it right back. And it's just a little bit of gamesmanship, a little bit of psychology there. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, I've actually got it on right now. I think it's Jovic that takes before McTominay. But yeah, there was almost sort of a sort of storyline behind every penalty taker, like the missing, like obviously you had Griffiths not sort of played consistently for a long time, McGregor being sort of criticised for never really performing to the Celtic standard for Scotland, obviously McTominay with a mistake, McBurney being sort of heavily criticised throughout, and then I mean, the McLean one's kind of more just the sense of miss, and then you would have potentially, as you said, given Serbia the chance to win. But yeah, all sort of. I thought you were like a way to just deny there a second ago, Christy, that Griffiths actually scored when you said.
No.
Is it, you're just like, nah, not having, nah, he didn't score. I'm not having that one.
He said Griffiths penalty truther.
Yeah.
I suppose we should just get on to the moment, the specific moment of Marshall saving the penalty.
Yeah, like, there was a... When you were saying, like, you only sort of doubted McBurney, was it? I was just doubting everyone. I thought, he'll miss, like, obviously. But, like, I just... Every time a Serbian player stepped up, I was like, yeah, well, he's probably going to score. Like, I was just ready for the failure. But it was just quite... Like, I don't know if there was something about Mitrovic. I just... I don't really like him as a player. I just... I think he's pretty average and gets a sort of like he gets bigged up to be something that he's some sort of elite Premier League striker. I mean, he's not really. He's played in he scores most of his goals in the Championship. Like, don't think this is something that special. But I saw a lot of people saying like, oh, he wanted to be the hero, but it's probably. Taking more of a responsibility sort of sense to that. I mean, you would probably want your striker taking the high pressure pen, but I mean, get up and who cares?
Well, to be fair, it's even funnier because after Adebola Lookman tried a Panenka and got it horribly wrong for Fulham, he had recently just said, "I'm the number one penalty taker now at Fulham." Well, I might want to rethink that one.
Yeah, that's. I just get up even further. Just
I mean, he did absolutely nothing in the game. And I think that's the big thing was their big players. I think Tadic got a little couple of bits in. With their big players like him, Milinkovic, Savic, we just limited them so much. And then obviously he steps up to take the penalty. I don't know. I think it was McFadden was saying in the coverage. He was saying he was stepping up, hopefully at fifth, to thinking that he was going to be taking the penalty to win it for Serbia, and he ends up taking it to keep them in the game. And it's maybe that mentality switch that's seen them, you know, sort of take maybe change his mind a little bit on where he's going, his placement, and obviously Marshall getting the save.
Yeah, there's something that there's a book. Read called Soccernomics, and they were pretty sure there's something in it that like 58% of pen shootouts is won by the team who take first. And kind of after reading that and watching pen shootouts, most I've seen is actually won by the team that takes first. So when we stepped up first, that did give me a wee like boost, thinking yeah, because you're the sort of second takers are always under a wee bit more pressure. I find. No matter what happens, if someone scores, if someone misses, they're always going to have to react to it. But just the thing is as well, it's a decent pen from. I don't think it's a bad pen from Mitrovic. I just think
it's not awful, though.
It's one of them. It's just a top penalty save. But I mean, to be fair, Christy, it got you. You went viral through the penalty save.
It's not too bad then. I didn't even think it was that great. I just sorry. I thought I've got one for that.
That's the equivalent of saying like, oh, the goal, it doesn't matter about me scoring. It's all about the team.
Because like. I've seen a few since. Because I mean, about the other things like the still game one is like it's always a cheese with sandwiches. as well, that's quite a good one. My phone, well, thankfully it's began to slow down, but across Friday and then into Saturday, just the notification button on Twitter was regularly popping up, and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. what a moment, and it would have been crushing if it had been VAR and said, oh, your foot's 3 millimetres off the line. Thankfully, it was well and truly on the line, and that was that. I mean, you could just see with the players, they were just so delighted. It means so much to them. I think something that we've kind of criticised some players for in the past, and you know, you could name names like guys like Matt Ritchie and things like that who. Clearly aren't that arsed about it, but I think that this is a squad full of players who are desperate to get there and who are absolutely delighted to pull on the shirt. and I'm so happy for every single one of them.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you can see even in that image that was part of your tweet that went so viral, Christy, like, as soon as he gets that confirmation from the official, there's almost immediately a tear in Marshall's eye, and he kind of yells out towards the other players. And yeah, I think some of those players as well, the likes of McTominay at Manchester United, gets criticised for being like a passion merchant, if you like, but quite like that. I like that about, certainly when you're coming up to your national team, and like you said, we've had some guys who in the past have just kind of gone through the motions away on international duty, so it's good to know that these guys care so much. And obviously Ryan Christie's post-match interview was, I thought, really reflective of a lot of people in Scotland.
Aye, because you see after in the coverage after, like, the you see the players like all charging to Marshall, and it kind of cuts to Christie, and he's on his knees clearly crying, like on the edge of the penalty area just on his own. So I'm assuming it's probably been quite a lengthy teary process there for Christie, because he's probably had to wait another like 5 minutes or so to do the interview. But yeah, as you said, it just kind of is quite symbolic, almost, that it shows how much it means to all of them, and especially Christie there. And I just can't wait for next June now, which is going to be...
I think the other thing for us is that it's a likeable group of players. I mean, I know that I have said certain things about certain players of them in the past, probably when they were up here, but now they've gone to England, I now see them as being likeable. I mean, John McGinn and Kieran Tierney are probably the two that I'm talking about there. But I mean, it is a team full of likeable players. And I think that's kind of... maybe that's a little bit more of it as well. And obviously there's guys who either... are or have recently been playing in Scotland and maybe not playing for like some Celtic and Rangers. I mean, you've got two Motherwell players in the starting 11, you've got Lyndon Dykes, who was just recently at Livingston, you've got plenty of guys recently at Aberdeen or currently with Considine in the squad. I wrote it down earlier and I've kind of lost it, but I wrote it down, the amount of clubs in Scotland who have had some impact in development of the players in the squad, it's about half, you know, there's about 15, 16 clubs that have had some impact on all those players' careers that have helped us qualify. And it's not just, you know, Aberdeen, Celtic, Rangers, Hibs. I mean, even it's guys like Kenny McLean had a loan spell at Arbroath, Declan Gallagher played for Clyde, you know, Stephen O'Donnell started off at Partick Thistle. So it's all different clubs, and it's just great to see. I think the fact that a lot of them have recently played in Scotland means that we've got a bit more of an attachment to them than we maybe would have with, you know, guys in probably Gordon Strachan's squad, who are like squad players for West Brom that you barely know and you don't care about, whereas these are people that you're watching every week and you're just really happy for them.
Who did Andy Robertson start out with again? I can't remember that.
Oh God, I've forgotten about that one, was it?
But I mean, like, kind of without all jokes aside about that, so sort of overdone, but I mean it's still they've Queen's Park have played a part in it all those years ago, I guess. But
Shanklin as well,
yeah obviously, but yeah, Shanklin too. But yeah, as I said, like, it's just quite we've been doing this for what, like, four, almost 5 years now, and next year we'll be able to sort of preview the Euros and us playing. I think we might have previewed one of the Euros before.
I don't think we did the Euros, we did the World Cup.
It was 2018 World Cup we did, wasn't it? And now we can sort of preview a tournament with Scotland involved, and no doubt predict three straight victories in the groups and an absolute a convincing win over England at Wembley. So
I'm personally looking forward to God Save the Queen being booed out of the building at Wembley. that'll be what's fueling me until next summer. I mean, because somebody shared the video today of it obviously happening at Hampden, and it is deafening how loud those boos are, and you do not hear a single peep of God Save the Queen.
Yeah. Can we just hijack the PA system and play Yes Sir, I Can Boogie over the top? Yes, sir.
Please. Oh, like what you did there, but
I mean that's the other thing there as well. I think that because obviously none of us were really able to go out and celebrate. I think that's what made it more special was seeing all the players being able to enjoy the night and enjoy the moment. You obviously see it in the changing rooms with the Yes Sir Right and Boogie and when they're coming into Proclaimers and things like that, and then the conga line after probably in the hotel with for David Marshall. That's, I mean, I've watched that video so many times over the past couple of days, and it's just so good.
One of the funniest things as well as the post match stuff is just you're thinking of, like, you just put yourself in Michael Stewart's shoes and you get a notification at 5:30 in the morning from Ollie McBurney just say helmet.
I remember waking up in the morning to see that. I was like, fucking hell.
Right.
And then the other thing was obviously Declan Gallagher offering Tony Bellew a square goal. He was like, me, you, and the ring, we'll settle this. I mean, just brilliant, just going after everybody. We quite enjoy Scotland players just going after the critics. I'm quite disappointed I didn't get a tweet from John McGinn saying bell end or something like that for all the stick I'm giving him over the past years. But tell you what, John, if you ever listen to this, I don't take it back. I stand by what I said at the time, but what I said may not have actually panned out. You're having a great career, and you're a top player.
See, what I was—I actually loved the Gallagher having a go at Bellew, because he's just—I hate him, Tony Bellew. I remember seeing him on like Soccer AM, and he slipped while taking one of those pens, and he was like crying, and like they were all having, like laughing at him, and he was like almost storming off, like chill out, mate.
He was on the SAS Who Dares Wins on Channel 4, and he was pretty heavy on that as well, and you're like, just. Take yourself, one or two pegs down
there. Yeah.
You know, the worst thing about him, and this is a super big tangent, but every single boxing match he ever has, he like takes the opportunity to portray himself as the underdog because he's just that. And I'm not even going to try to do a Scouse accent, but he portrays himself as just a fat lad from Merseyside. It's like, all right, okay, mate, we've heard this all before.
I'll disagree with you because he didn't do that in the movie Creed.
Well, I hope he's not going to see himself as the underdog in a fight against Declan Gallagher. But
he'll probably be like, Declan Gallagher, professional athlete. I've been out the game. I've just been eating pies.
Yeah, and crying on Soccer AM. So, jokes on you, Tony.
John Carver pulling his calf celebrating the penalty.
When I saw that, I thought he like stood on his toes with a boot or something like that. But I mean, to be fair, we've kind of went through all this and we've not even mentioned Steve Clark yet.
My hero.
I think, I mean, we all kind of in the back of our minds sort of had the hope, but I think you were saying for a while, Haz, that you were fairly confident he'd take us to the Euros or take us to a tournament, and he obviously has now. But we all kind of said at the time as well, it doesn't really matter about how the performance is, as long as we get there. And I mean, while the performance was really good on Thursday, in the day we're there, it doesn't matter how we did it. And just he's done exactly what we brought him to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, this goes back to a few years ago when Scotland were still in a state of limbo, and there was in some corners, some calls for Big Sam to come in at Scotland after what happened to him with England.
I remember that.
I suppose it's not the same, but there's an element of pragmatism involved in both Steve Clark and Big Sam's kind of football ideologies. But, you know, Steve Clark is a manager who I think for years has been kind of underrated. I thought when he was at West Brom, he did a really good job and got sacked kind of unceremoniously, a bit harshly. Okay, they do great at Reading, but then I think, to be fair to the SFA, and they don't get a lot of things right, but in this this scenario, they went out, they got the guy who it made the most sense to get for the Scotland job. He was on the up after a great spell at Kilmarnock. And just in terms of style, as I've said, pragmatic, gets the job done. And yeah, like I said, I've just had a good feeling about Steve Clarke from the off. I think he was the right man for the job, and so it's turned out. And I'm hoping that it's kind of a long spell at the helm of the Scottish national team, but I actually kind of doubt it. I think obviously he's got a few cycles kind of left in him in this job, but I think he's going to be highly sought after.
Yeah, I hope that we can at least hold on to him, and we can hopefully get to the World Cup in 2022. I think if we were to get to the World Cup and he would leave after that, I think everybody would be just thankful, because we'd then take us to two major tournaments. But he's done everything. He's done everything you would have liked him to do and expected him to do. He's made Scotland very, very difficult to beat. We're not the most catching, eye-catching team. Not the best team to watch, but in the international stage, it's all about being difficult to beat, I think, and that's exactly what he's done. He's sorted out our defence that was leaking goals for fun. He's got us very well drilled, very well structured, and now we're adding a little bit more creativity, a little bit more flair, maybe a bit more, hopefully, to come a little bit more goals. You know, good teams are always built off of a good defence, and that's the main thing that he's got sorted. He's managed to convince Lyndon Dykes to come and play for us as well, which is massive. So yeah, I mean, he's what a legend. He's done everything that we wanted of him to do, and he's got us where we are, and we're so thankful to have him, because I think, if he didn't come in, I don't think we would have been in this situation at all. I think we're the wrong choice of manager. I think there's every chance we'd have got beat by Israel.
Yeah, we could just still be floating about in the wilderness. But I think we'll finish things off there. We'll be back next week looking through the Premiership action. I don't think it'll be anywhere near as exciting as what we've seen over the last Thursday. But We'll be back to look back and then on those fixtures. But as always, thanks for listening. We'll see you at the Euros next summer.